Order. Councillor DeBoer isn't here. Councillor Foley, would you say the prayer, please?
Grant us, O God, perception and patience, that justice, truth, and honesty may be evident in our planning and our governing. Make us aware of the needs of each part of this town of Caledon. Save us from a parochialism that divides, and so create in us a desire for progress and responsible action, that all our words and deeds may be in accord with thy will. To the glory of thy holy name, amen.
Thank you. We did have an added delegation on our summary of addendum items, but they haven't arrived yet, and we haven't heard if they're coming or not. We thought they were, but they're not here. So just to let you know that they are here. Oh, okay, yes. Oh, good. Okay, they are here. Okay, wonderful. And the other thing I would like to do before we approve the agenda is introduce our new detachment commander, Inspector Tim Mellinson. Inspector Mellinson, if you'd just like to stand so everybody can see who you are. This is our new police chief in Caledon, so welcome. Okay, we have the agenda before us. Don't we have... Resolutions? Don't have one? Okay. Okay. I need a motion, a mover and a seconder to approve the agenda that's before us. Councillor Patterak, Councillor Foley, all those in favor? It's carried. Is there any disclosure of pecuniary interest? Seeing none. There's no closed meeting. And so we will go straight to Mr. Barnes.
So just as a start, Bethany Lee is going to coordinate the presentations, and Bethany is going to start off with some video.
Good afternoon, through you, Madam Mayor, to members of Council. In the last week and a half, we have...
Bethany, can I just stop you for a second? Mm-hmm. If we turn the lights down, maybe we can see it better. We can't see it very well.
Sure.
Please? Thank you.
In the past week and a half, we've asked folks who are out on the road doing the work that they've been doing to send in their photos. So what I'm starting with this afternoon is a cross-section of photography from the town. I think you'll see that the images are quite impactful. I hope you can see them. So I do have some media clips as well. I'm just trying to get the sound. I think we'll have to return to those. I don't hear any sound at this point.
A big blast of ice has left thousands of people without electricity tonight. Power lines are down everywhere, and it could be a while before some customers are back on the grid. In our area, York Region was hit hard. Mike Walker has a look at what residents are dealing with.
In Bolton, power lines and large tree branches came crashing down.
So I think what we'll do is we'll proceed with the PowerPoint at this point. I can always come back to that later.
Trees coming down all around us.
A big mess to clean up, and it's left thousands in the dark across the Cowlitan area.
So, Council, I'm going to start off, and I'll then turn it over to different members of staff. Bethany is going to direct us through. First of all, the purpose of the update is really to provide an update in terms of what's been happening with the ice storm, the status of our town response, provide you with information on the costs that we've incurred to date, and to start charting out the next steps, what we're going to have to do. The ice storm is over, but the recovery period is going to be quite extensive.
Across York Region, it's the same story. Snap tree branches and drooping hydro lines coated in a thick layer of ice. PowerStream says tens of thousands of customers in the region.
So I'd like to speak a little bit about the initial stages of the emergency response. I believe that Barb has passed out a timeline. No. Okay, so we have a timeline in the initial stages and some details from throughout the week. As you know, I was in constant communication with you, but this will just sort of highlight the early stages. During the ice storm initial phase, communications was in constant contact with fire and emergency services to assess and communicate the situation to all staff members. Senior management team leaders were notified of the levity of the situation. Human health and safety was deemed to be at risk based on the power outages and the estimated time to restoration. And we quickly developed an awareness that the town would be interacting with various intergovernmental agencies, employees, team members, and so on, and that everybody would be activated townwide. We therefore took a proactive approach to establish the ongoing communication updates and assist in establishing the Emergency Operations Center with Fire and Emergency Services. So in the early stages, communications took a role in collecting information and coordinating activities. And I can fill you in a little bit about the decisions that were made. We decided to activate the EOC to assemble the team members. We kept the CAO, the mayor, acting mayor, aware of the storm effects for the town. You'll see some of those early steps that we took on the timeline that I have provided. The communications manager, myself, I took the lead in communications for both internal and external audiences, and I worked with our subject matter experts within the town to coordinate and get that information out in as timely manner as possible. We also started working with our external stakeholder groups, for instance, Hydro One, the Region of Peel, Peel Living, etc. The following actions were taken. So we gathered the facts, and that helped others make decisions. So really early on, we were coordinating those activities. We were identifying our information sources, who was on duty at the region or at Hydro One, who were our main contacts, and in emergency services as well. Very early on, we established our key messages. So in the early stages, we were very much talking about emergency response. So what to do if you were in trouble. So getting that information out there about calling 911, you know, how to not to go near power lines, all of those different types of messages were established quite early on. Throughout the ice storm incident, we changed the messaging. So as time progressed and our activities changed and what we were asking residents to and businesses to do, then our messages changed. We develop timelines for our communications, so working closely with Fire and Emergency Services, our Public Works, and our Parks and Recreation teams, we found out what would happen when would we be able to provide those updates, and what were good time frames to be able to accomplish that. During the time frame, we drafted and issued over 20 official media statements. That doesn't include regular communications that we were doing sort of behind the scenes, but those were the pieces that we did get out to our mass audiences. So that would include all staff, members of council, and members of our media lists. We do maintain two media lists, a local media distribution list and a wide media distribution list. And during this event, we kept all members of the media informed. We also used our website extensively during this time, and we were able to ramp up our social media channels, which was quite successful. In addition, we were monitoring and answering calls from the media, assisting the media in obtaining pertinent information, and getting them interviews with the subject matter experts. There were a few instances where incorrect information was sent out. We did our best to try to rectify that. As well, we recorded the activities of the EOC, so it's important when we go back and we look at what happened and what decisions were made, we have a record of that. I think I've probably covered most there. It's worth noting that now we are still in a communications mode, so we're switching from a more reactive approach to a more proactive stance as we move forward with this cleanup and recovery, and we're continuing to track our media and ensure that we're getting continued coverage. We're also assisting staff through emails, posters, townwide advertising, and so on. So the communication, really, the work continues, and we're supporting our subject matter experts in that. At this time, I'd like to call upon Leo Butko, Manager of Regulatory and Inspection Services, who is acting director during the time frame, to let us know a little bit about the cleanup that Public Works has undertaken.
Thank you, Bethany. Previous to December 21st, Public Works crews had worked 10 days in a row clearing snow, ensuring that the town's roads were clear. On December 20th, with the bad weather warning, Public Works staff was advised that a declaration of a significant event was made to allow staff extension of hours. On Saturday, December 21st, the ice storm hit Caledon. Public road crews continually plowed and sanded the roads in an attempt to keep them safe and open. Calls from the public and the region of Peel regarding downed trees, they started coming in. As a result of the storm, road conditions worsened and staff received hundreds of downed trees called. Next slide. Public Works staff worked in cooperation with Hydro, as well as we had the valuable support of staff from Parks and Recreation. Also, outside contractors were utilized. All worked diligently to clear the roads of trees and debris, to close roads that were that were a danger to the public, replow them if necessary, and to reopen them when the conditions were safe. Some of the major roads that were closed included Bramley, north of King, Coulahan, Centerville, and Castledurg, Grange, and Shaws Creek. In Bolton, some of the major roads affected included Longwood Drive, Kingsview Drive, and DeRose. Next slide. The rural areas, they were largely affected with large downed trees, which are impacting many hamlets, including Bell Fountain, the Cataracts, Caledon East, Palgrave, and Mono Mills. The hydro outages also affected Yard 1, which had no hydro for 3 days, and they maintained priority operations with minimal backup generators. On December 27th, the last major road that was closed opened that evening, and the declaration of a significant event for staff work hours was lifted on that date. Public Works staff continue to monitor and clear the roads, oversee contractors, and we continue the cleanup efforts of debris. That's it.
At this time, I'd like to call upon Brian Baird, Parks Manager and Landscape Architect for the Town of Caledon, who shared the acting duty directors with Heather Flaherty over this storm time frame.
So from a parks perspective, throughout this time period, park staff worked the whole time except Christmas Day, keeping as many sidewalk machines operational as we could. Half our full-time staff got asked to help Public Works with tree removals. So we supplemented that staff with casual staff to keep the sidewalk machines going and making sure sidewalks are safe in Caledon. As far as the urban road side is concerned, there's about 200 trees affected. During this time period, Public Works and Parks took 160 tree calls, where same time period last year, we took 10. So it was pretty significant, the impact it had on our operations. Next slide, please. Yes. As far as the urban canopy is concerned, the main areas hit were the North Hill of Bolton, particularly Longwood Ave and Kingsview Drive and Bolton, DeRose Avenue in Bolton, Summergate Court in Caledon East, and Vale Crest Court in Valleywood. These efforts continue. Park staff worked this past Saturday working on tree issues, then they had to go out Sunday and continue to work on sidewalk plowing. And we now have about 11 staff from the Ministry of Natural Resources helping us dealing with some tree issues. They have been deployed today, as of today.
Thank you, Brian. At this time, I'd like to call upon Daryl Bailey, Deputy Chief, Caledon Fire and Emergency Services.
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor and members of Council. The first day of the storm, the initial concerns was for us was to provide an update to both council and senior management team and provide an early status report of the delivery of fire protection and emergency services after the first night. Fire provided a situation report in the morning to CAO and manager of corporate communications. A proactive approach was then taken to establish the emergency operations center, and this allowed for a central location to coordinate our emergency response capabilities and provide for critical and timely fire safety messaging. Deputy Wallace established early communications with the Region of Peel staff and had regular two-way communication and status updates following the days of the storm. We were also advised very early that Brampton had activated their crisis command center. And referring to the slide from December the 21st to the January the 2nd, we had 234 emergency incidents. This time last year, in the same time frame, we had approximately 70 emergency incidences. And during this time, we had 8 reported house fires, and unfortunately, 2 of those were major losses, and they were located on the Gore Road and Bramley Road. Throughout the ice storm event, fire services was able to maintain the council-approved level of fire protection services. For that, we're grateful and give full credit to the men and women of the Caledon Fire Emergency Services. Next slide. Peel Living property manager was contacted on the status of the 6 senior supportive housing residences in Caledon. These were located at 121 Glasgow Road, 25 Station View Place, 60 Jane Street, 20 Walker Road, 1640 Maple Grove, and 9 McClellan Drive in Alton. At that point, it was confirmed that only 60 Jane Street, 20 Walker Road, and 9 McClellan Road, and these would be known as the Jane Street Apartments, the Walker Road Residence, and the Pinnacle in Alton were all without power. However, no action was needed to relocate the residents at this time. The property manager was advised to contact Fire Emergency Services if the status changed or if they required anything. Additionally, these residences at Jane Street, Walker's Road, and 9 McClellan were visited by fire service personnel twice a day from the onset until the outage was until the restoration of power occurred. Additionally, regular phone calls were made to the on-site nurse at these various locations. Also confirming that King Nursing Home and Viram Davis Nursing Home in Bolton were unaffected and at full power. Early on, contact was made to the Oliver House, a home for special care located in Caledon Village, and staff confirmed they were operating on generator power and did not require anything. Later on, there was some information and fire services personnel made a visit on December the 27th and provided occupancy support. About the time that our staff member was traveling out there, they got full power. And in conjunction with the owner, we thought it'd be a good idea for our staff member to pay a visit and see if there was anything they needed and if there is anything that we could do for them. Slide 12. Some of the stations being the Alton Fire Station, Bolton Fire Station, Callan East, the Inglewood Fire Station, Palgrave Fire Station, and as well as the Snellgrove or the Valleywood Fire Station, and various fire administration staff all provided site visits. And whether they were to the facilities or they were to street and road locations, this was a full involvement right across the board from fire and emergency services personnel. Additionally, staff coordinated volunteer firefighters to provide 24-hour coverage to staff the warming center in Bolton. Additionally, contact was made to the Red Cross, who delivered 100 sleeping cots to the town of Caledon. Additionally, arrangements were made with the Duffer and Peel Victim Services to provide 24/7 transportation services to our residents if they were required. Slide 13. Location visits to the following areas were conducted during the weekday by volunteer and career firefighters. Concerns with the well-being of the residents, accessibility, hazards, and occupant needs were the reasons for the visits. Roads were selected by looking at the hydro outage maps and pinpointing areas without power. Additionally, updated media releases were provided to the residents by fire crews during these location visits, as well as during emergency responses. And some of those streets, we're still filtering into, we're still getting information on various roads, but so far we've gotten the Grange, Old Base, Shaw's Creek, Forks of the Credit, Bush Street, the Gore Road, Finnerty Side Road, and Old King Road. And I'm expecting more to come in the coming days as the reports start coming into headquarters. Others, there's no slide at this point, but other customers' service provided was we had watered 44 thoroughbred horses, providing a tanker to the owner, and this tanker was run by the fire crews on Boxing Day. The owner contacted us, and we were glad to help him out. We also had several calls for residents requiring lift assists, as sometimes they didn't have relatives or the support workers to get to their homes to provide assistance. Also, we had a lengthy fire investigation and provided support to the Ontario Fire Marshal's Office, who was called in at one of our major house fires, and several staff members, both career and volunteer, provided that support. This concludes the report from Fire and Emergency Services.
Thank you, Daryl. At this time, I'd like to call upon Heather Flaherty, Programs and Community Development Manager, who was also sharing the acting duty responsibilities.
Thank you, Bethany. On Monday, December 23rd, staff opened 4 warming centers for the residents of Caledon. Overnight access was coordinated at the Mayfield Recreation Complex, Caledon Center for Recreation and Wellness, and at Town Hall. Albion Bolton Community Center was open, regularly open on this day, and stayed open until 10 p.m. during regularly operating hours for residents if they required a place to go in that area. Attendance at the centers are as follows, and through the chart, the Caledon Center showed 89 participants, or sorry, residents, which primarily was for showers, showers and food. Mayfield early on reported larger numbers during the evening of December 21st, or 23rd, sorry. However, they were primarily parents of rentals. Albion Bolton reported 2 residents, Town Hall 13. And on December 24th at 8 p.m., the warming centers were closed at the recreation centers where Bolton Fire Station then opened up and provided the seamless service for residents to have a place to go for a warming center. All of our advertised regular hours were posted on the website through our facility schedules, and primarily we stuck to our modified schedule, just dealing with power outages along the way.
Thank you, Heather. Doug, I'd like to turn back to you for some of the additional actions and some of the issues identified.
Thank you. The OPP were also part of our contacts in terms of how we dealt with different issues. Some of the items on the warming centers that we dealt with, we had to have warming centers which actually had power. And so this particular facility here was one which was available, and we have a backup generator. The new OPP building also has power because they're serviced by the same backup generator. So I did talk at that time with Dominic Beckett, and Dominic made the OPP building available if we needed it. Normally, the OPP building doesn't have support staff available after 8 p.m., but if they were going to open it, the OPP was ready to, in fact, open that facility and provide full-time staffing. Fortunately, we didn't have the need for it, so we went ahead. The finance department also made sure that all of our staff, especially those that were operating the warming centers, had spending authority if they needed to purchase food or anything else. The mayor and I were also, and our communications staff were also involved in a conference call with the mayor of the other two cities and the chair of the region appeal to talk about a coordinated effort. As we go forward, we took a look at what happened over the last 12 days and what were the issues that we thought were particularly problematic in terms of going forward. Everyone was referenced to find out when your hydro would go back on, when your electricity would go back on, by going to the Hydro website or Hydro One website. Unfortunately, the mapping of the website is not by municipality, it's by distribution center. And so to a large extent, that Hydro One mapping showed us that Bolton and Orangeville were out of power, or at about 10,000 people in each community of those two centers. In fact, Orangeville had very little impact, and most of that 10,000 was the west side of Caledon. And the Bolton numbers, which looked like it was only Bolton, actually includes all of Palgrave and over into King. So the actual mapping was not that helpful in terms of when your power would come back on. And we have had a number of, Bethany has had a number of discussions with the communications staff at Hydro One in terms of how we might be able to improve that. The second part that we had, which was a major restriction, is the town does not have a radio station. And the actual Toronto media, which does have communication ability into Caledon, actually only picked up one incident, and that was the incident where one individual Caledon resident was seriously injured by a falling piece of tree. That was it. That was the total pickup that we got. So in our mind, there's a real issue here in terms of what the public responsibility is for radio stations like that in terms of the service area. The third item we found was, even though we were lucky that we had power in Bolton and in Mayfield, those facilities do not have backup power. So if they had actually gone down, we would have only had the OPP building and town hall where we could have actually had backup power. So we think that's a real challenge as well. If you had the opportunity to follow the media, you'd have seen that provincial support was only focused on Toronto. A lack of recognition that the ice storm actually went beyond the boundaries of Toronto. And I think we could have, and that's actually going forward. If you saw the food support cards were distributed in Toronto last week, it isn't until today that some of the places in 905 are getting that assistance. The last issue is we have never had to deal with this amount of debris removal. And so the ongoing task here, this will not happen in the next couple of weeks. We are going to be removing debris from our properties for the next couple of months. And obviously the private sector, in terms of private property owners, are going to have the same problem. So just to, I've mentioned some of this, but I want to get back into looking exactly at what happens in terms of the removal of debris. So part of that is, what is the municipal role, and what is the regional role, what's the private role? And I think, Bethany, we've skipped ahead a slide. So on the town responsibility in terms of debris removal, our real responsibility is clear the roads, clear the sidewalks, clear the parks, and the property where we have public buildings. That's our main responsibility. We have checked a number of other municipalities, and generally the responsibility that municipalities have been willing to undertake has been their own property and their own property alone. However, if a tree is, a town tree, falls onto private property, that's also our responsibility to clean up. So that's the approach that we've been taking to date as a town responsibility. On the regional responsibility, and certainly which has been expressed by the region to date, is support to private property owners. They've opened the recycling centers so that debris can be brought there free by either private individuals or by contractors. And I believe next week they'll be starting a curbside debris pickup program. And in terms of the private property owners, and here we would make the assumption that the amount of debris on private property is probably the same as public property, which means there's a lot of it. And that responsibility does rest with the originating property owners, and that's going to be a very large burden that I think we're going to hear quite a lot more about. So in terms of what we've actually been doing, we've been trying to marshal all of our own resources to deal with this. Mayor Morrison issued a request to the Greater Toronto Countryside Alliance municipalities and also to the aggregate producing municipalities. If those municipalities, which were not subject to the ice storm, could they lend us equipment? And we've had very good response. Kawartha Lakes is sending us a 16-inch chipper, which is a fairly large piece of equipment. Georgina and Brock are bringing in 12-inch chippers for us. And of course, starting today, we have the support from the Ministry of Natural Resources. We have a crew on site on the North Hill in Bolton today. These are challenges that we're gonna have to deal with, and private property owners are gonna have to deal with. What resources are available? There isn't enough resources to see the clearing up happen right now. And not only that, how much can individuals do given the ongoing cold weather that we currently have? So I think the biggest problems that we're going to see is the ongoing time frame to actually see the clearing happen, and the cost is going to be effective to some homeowners.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Fuing Wong, Treasurer for the Town of Caledon, on the preliminary cost estimates.
Thank you. So in a summary of the ice storm-related expenditures from December 21st to the end of the year is shown on the slide before you. A total of about $557,000 was spent during this period. The categories listed are in the prescribed format set by the province for municipalities that wish to request for financial assistance related to disaster recovery. Now, at this point, no financial assistance has been announced by the province, but just in case, we're providing this in this format. Further, all municipalities within Peel Region will be reporting in this format. So under the category of evacuation and shelter, which is our warming centers, we spent about $6,000 during the period, and that is mainly fuel for the generator here at Town Hall and some food for the warming centers. Under emergency relief, that is meant for food and water for volunteers and relief workers, as well as relief supplies such as salt. The total spent there is approximately $105,000, and the majority of that was related to salt. Cleanup costs, which is clearing and removal of debris and wreckage. We had contracted services for tree removal, snow clearing, and sanding. Total there is approximately $137,000. Overtime related to the ice storm in the fire and emergency services area, parks and recreation, and the public works and engineering area totals about $286,000. Additional security costs related to OPP overtime is about $2,000. And we had some immediate repairs to Town of Caledon facilities, which totals about $21,000. So during the spring, as we do a more thorough assessment, more work will be required in terms of cleanup and repair restoration to town and public facilities. These are the estimated costs to date, and we expect more to come in the coming months, and Mr. Barnes will cover that in the next slide.
So to date, what are we going to be doing next? First of all, we're going to continue the cleanup. This is going to be ongoing. We don't know how long it will take, but certainly it will be ongoing, and we'll continue to do as much as we can. It's very important to note that the cleanup of trees, which are being done principally by parks and with the support of Public Works, can only really happen when they're not dealing with ice and snow. And so we've had another big snowfall, so that slows down the actual response time. So that's why getting the additional equipment and resources from other places is very important. But we must recognize it is winter, and it's going to take a while for the cleanup to continue. We will monitor all of our expenses. We think this is particularly important. Other municipalities are doing the same, and hopefully we'll be able to pass on some of those expenses to the provincial government. We will be doing a more formal report to council on January the 14th. We have started that report already, but procedurally we felt that we needed to be able to issue that report publicly prior to it coming to council, and so we'll do it next week. We started actually before the holidays and before this happened to consider the development of a new emergency response plan. After the ice storm, we've recognized, and I've pointed out some of the challenges, we have a lot to do in terms of developing, better relationships with media, so we can try and build that relationship. We've also got to think about what facilities we have and the designation of what staff in terms of call-ins and so on. So we've got a lot of work to do on our emergency response plan, much more beyond what we had in our original response plan and in our continuity of services response plan. So there's a lot of work to be done, and that work will be led by Fire and Emergency Services. We also need to assess the need for more facilities with power and backup. And this isn't just for the warming centers. Public works yards, fire departments, all of those, I think we need to do a complete assessment of what we need. And this isn't just for the case of an ice storm. I think we really need to think about it. If we're going to have climatic change with hot days and that kind of stuff, are we going to need facilities as cooling centers and other kind of offsets? This is something that we really need to consider in our plan and how we go about doing it. And I think as Brian mentioned earlier, some of the pictures you saw at the beginning, in the urban areas we have lost approximately, or we think we will lose, up to about 200 trees. We don't have a plan for replacing those trees. We did have a plan for working towards replacement, dealing with some of the destruction of trees caused in the ash tree canopy. Yeah. But that's all we have, so we need to think about a plan to move forward with that. We will be reporting back to council on a regular basis in terms of progress and also in terms of any requests we have for new resources and maybe reprioritizing some of our capital resources. So that's where we are today. Thank you.
Mr. Barnes, I think it might be a good idea if you or staff, we talked about how many people came to our warming centers, but I think and 100 cots were provided, et cetera, for overnighters. It might be a good idea to tell everyone whether there were any overnighters or not.
The reason why we were able to close the centers was because we didn't have any overnighters. Mostly it was people stopping in to get something to eat, to warm up, and so on. And so we felt that we didn't need to keep the centers open over Christmas. So we moved to have the emergency response on the centers move to the Bolton Fire Station, where we have 24/7 service. And then the fire department also brought in volunteers to make sure if there was a call out in Bolton that we would still have staff at the center. And Caledon Dufferin Victim Services, they were available to provide free transportation to Bolton if we needed for any family in Caledon. So we thought we had it covered off in that way. We also think, though, that going forward, the lack of access to radio media may have actually prevented some people from finding out that we had those centers. So that may have been a restriction in terms of utilization. And so going forward, we really need to assess that category. And we've never had a warming center open in Caledon before, so there may have been an expectation that we weren't going to do that. So again, more around the communication of it, so that we may have to use those facilities in the future.
Okay, thank you.
I don't think at this time we have the ability to have sound unless we take a break, so I believe you have a delegation.
Yes. Just so council knows, the new sound system in the chambers is not going to be activated until next week. So if you have a question, we're going to do it the way we always have, where you put your hand up and I will write your name down on my piece of paper, and then I'll acknowledge you. We also are going to not take any questions from council until after the CVC presentation. Okay. So I think that's the next presentation. Okay, we were told, first of all, that you were coming, and then we were told it's John Kincaid, but then when you got up, I realized it's Deborah, it's not John Kincaid. Okay. So just for council's information, Deborah Martin Downs is the new executive director of the Credit Valley Conservation Authority. Okay. I don't think you've seen her before, maybe. While we're waiting for this to come up, I just wanted to say that how impressed I was with staff and their commitment to the residents of the town of Caledon. I can tell you that I was constantly in communications with Bethany, with Tony Maxwell. Leo Butko did an outstanding job also. As the acting director of public works, Daryl Bailey and Mark Wallace kept me totally informed, which I know they kept council up to date. And anything I wanted to know when I emailed back or phoned in or whatever, boom, it was right there. So I just want to say that you were absolutely superb, and I know you gave up your Christmas. I know you gave up your New Year's, you gave up the whole holiday season, and you know, I've said to Mr. Barnes that I wish there was something we could do for you, because you have given up so much time. Brian Baird and Heather Flaherty. I know that you gave up all your time also. And I can tell you that the residents of this municipality appreciate it very, very much. And we had many counselors who did a lot. I know my office phoned Alan Thompson, the generator guy, because of the farm that called and had couldn't get water for the horses. And I don't know how to run a generator, so call Alan. He's a farmer. He knows how to run a generator. So, and sure enough, he got a generator out to them. And I know Councillor Foley, I heard from people where Councillor Foley was providing hot drinks and food for the seniors. And I know when I visited the different seniors' facilities, I know Councillor Patterak had been where they didn't have any heat and had visited them. And I know other councillors were constantly running around doing things for people. So I just want to say that, you know, that's what this municipality is made up of, people who come together and help each other. And I just want to thank everyone very, very much for giving up all their time during the holiday season with their family. They gave up family time so that they could do that. And, of course, I can't forget Mr. Barnes. Every time I showed up downstairs at the emergency room, shall we say, the operations center, Mr. Barnes was there. And so, you know, I want people to know that staff were just phenomenal pulling together through this. So thank you very much. And I see you're ready. Okay.
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor and members of council. It's my first opportunity to address you, and I wish it was under better circumstances, but I think we've got past the worst of it. John Kincaid is here. He's our Deputy CAO and our Director of Water Resources, as well as Judy Orndorff, who is the Director of Natural Heritage and Lands. So they're both here, and they were both backing me up because I was in New York City yesterday, and there wasn't even a chance I might not even got out with all the storms going on. So. Given the time constraints, we just prepared a few slides for you for your consideration today. We're going to just talk a bit about the potential for debris and ice accumulation in the river around Caledon, some of the conservation area impacts that we've been experiencing, what our role will be in woody debris management, and what we think we're going to need to do in the short and long term. So Councillor Thompson was kind enough to send me these pictures I guess it's probably a week ago now, expressing concern for what this may do in the spring melt for debris that's going to make its way into narrow areas and potentially cause buildup of the debris and result in more flooding. And certainly we have those concerns as well. As you know, there are a number of flood damage centers in Caledon that we monitor routinely. The asterisks show you, again, you can see them very well, but show you where the ice jam locations are. So that's in areas such as, this isn't very good. There we go. In this area, for example, down here. So those are some of the ice jam locations that we're concerned with. This isn't in Caledon, but this is a slide of the Mississauga Arundale ice control structure, and you can see on the right, top right picture, the debris that accumulates downstream. And we anticipate, as much as we anticipate the debris that might accumulate in Caledon, it will move downstream, and we're going to have to manage it elsewhere in the watershed. So what starts in Caledon doesn't stay in Caledon necessarily, and so we're going to have to be vigilant throughout the watershed. And you can see we just actually cleaned it up about a week before Christmas, so we were actually surprisingly well prepared for this event when it does start to come. We are also a landowner, and I want to speak about the impacts to our land. In the watershed, we own about 2,500 hectares of land in 60 conservation areas, and 10 of which are core or active areas where we have a lot of trails and people usage. We have an education centers as well as visitor centers and rental shops for cross-country and snowshoeing, and we own about 100 kilometers of trails throughout the watershed. So these are a few pictures of some of what we've had to deal with, particularly at Terracotta is the worst hit. This is the shows you the power lines here that are being pulled down by the trees, and we've been told that these are ours to deal with. So we are yet without power at Terracotta. This is our learning center, and we've managed to clear up some of the debris at this time. One of our trails at Ken Willens. And as a private landowner, we're going to be responsible to clear this debris, and that presents a hazard to our visitors and to our staff, and we'll be looking at the riparian zones in these areas as the credit runs through as well, and we'll decide what we have to deal with in terms of that action. I just put this flow chart up, and it does show various responsibilities for various agencies in emergency management and the conservation authorities in this box. And we do, our main role is, of course, looking at flood management and providing advice. And so in this case, we're certainly keeping an eye on whether we're going to end up with floods happening in the near term or long term. And then MNR in their district, we're pleased to hear that they are assisting, and we have heard that they were interested in providing assistance. So first, as an ecologist, I do need to remind you that wood getting into a stream isn't always a bad thing, but in our case, we have too much wood that's going to be getting in. So we do have some guidance as to when and how you remove debris and what's an appropriate level of removal in that area. So we would like to be part of the decision about what goes and how much goes. We do have a number of recommended actions that we're going to be taking in the short term and the long term. And one is that we will continue to monitor ice conditions and debris management at our flood damage centers. And we do that anyway on a 24/7 basis throughout the year. We do monitor the weather and the upstream snowpack to assess the risk of flooding and melt for spring melt and ice breakup. So that is ongoing every day. Our flood duty and engineering staff we've spoken with, and we're more than willing to provide technical advice and assistance to the town to evaluate and select appropriate debris management activities on the shorelines around Cheltenham, Inglewood, and Ken Willens area and Terracotta to make sure that we're getting the right stuff out at the right time. Our difficulty, of course, is going to be that we can't necessarily undertake that under the current conditions. And if the river's melting, it'll be difficult with the ice and trying to deal with that. So, in our conservation areas, we are continuing to assess and estimate what we have to remove in our particularly around our trails and where our properties abut private properties. We've been told we have our trees on their land as well. So we have a preliminary cost estimate for some of our hazard tree removal, and it's looking at about $250,000 between staff and contracted time with foresters and others. So it's a significant amount for us where we didn't have that money in our budget. We will also have to look at what our overtime costs are going to be, as you have lost revenues from the parks not being open. We're going to have to replace our hydro line at Terracotta. So there's going to be other costs that we haven't even been able to factor in at this point. We were already in the process of undertaking a study to reduce or to look at what potential measures we could undertake to reduce ice jams and flood damages in Cheltenham. So that work will be continuing, but it's made more important by what's potentially going to be happening today. And we will be reviewing our emergency preparedness plans, as you are, and looking at ways we can be helpful to each other. So at this point, that's just a quick overview of what we've been up to and what we can help you with at this time, and be happy to entertain questions.
Okay. What I'm going to do is I've started a list of councillors, and they're going to be asking all different people questions. So if there is a question of CVC, we could have you come back up or
absolutely
find a seat for you with a mic or something.
Don't worry.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I think now we will go to questions from council. So, Councillor Thompson, you're the first.
Well, before Deborah sits back down, I guess my first question is, I did send the pictures through, but is Cheltenham and Terracotta, we do have some problems, and I know Glenn Williams is in the same boat involving you guys, and that's not our municipality. I guess first of all is, what can we do as a collaboration between the town, MNR, yourselves, and also we got the private landowners. So is there an emergency measure? And I guess this is a question maybe I have more so for the town is, that we can get in on the properties, because I know the property owners have been asking both Councilor McClure and I, what can we do? And big thing is, as I said, I don't know until we have our meeting today. They're only too glad. They don't have the expertise, and I don't need anybody getting killed and drowned trying to do the right thing. I'm just saying, what can we collaborate? And I know there's willingness from the property owners as far as you need access, I'm willing. So what can we do? And maybe you can't have the answer today.
Mr. Barnes?
So through you, Mayor Morrison, is this a question about what we would do in the river area?
Yes.
I think there's lots of issues here, but rivers are Crown property. They belong to M&R. Usually the authority is delegated to conservation authorities. So we have and of course, if the problems aren't dealt with, then the town also will have problems and responsibilities. So we do need to collaborate, and there's no question about it. We need a combined effort, and I think we will establish that over the next couple of weeks. And not just with CVC, but we've also had contact with Toronto Region Conservation Authority, and they're pulling together their assessment of what the problems are with the Humber and Etobicoke Creek systems as well. So, I guess you could go back and say there's only one taxpayer. We're yes. All local agencies, and we need to find the best way of collaborating, and not only for the initial cleanup, but for prevention of future damage as well.
Which, thank you for that, and I just wanted to get some clarification, and we'll try to keep our residents informed as we go forward, and I know we've had some bad experiences, so everybody's on the edge, you have to understand. The other big question is I know we have companies and we have Growbark, which is in our ward, that they do, that's their business, is dealing with wood chips and recycling of wood. And I know they're working with other municipalities as we speak, and I'm just saying, is there any way, like for instance, Margaret Dunn is a war zone, just like everywhere else, but can we ask the residents to pilot in the park, and then Growbark can go in with their expertise and clean it up? Is that a consideration we can do?
Again, through you, Mayor Morrison, the issue that we really have to think about here is if people are coming and working on our property, then, for instance, leaving debris and trees and that kind of stuff, that becomes our liability in terms of any injury, any accidents which may occur, and so on. Now, that might be a risk that we're willing to take. At this stage, we haven't gotten to that discussion with Growbark, but we will,
okay.
And we'll see where we can go forward.
Like Johnson Park's another example, and different ones we can use. And under emergency procedure, is there a way that we, as I'm just saying, can we have that waived, or people understanding you're coming in your own risk, but it's really reducing an issue that we as counselors and everybody else are trying to deal with the phone calls is. I'm overwhelmed, and also the contractors are full to the nines. Like, they just have no place to put it, and now with the snowfall, it's the same guys that are snow removal. It's everybody's maxed out. So I know it's going to be a spring thaw, which leads to the private property owners, is fire permits, which is dragging in fire. And I know I've had some conversations with our fire guys on this. Is there any way that, it'll probably be in the spring, but there's protocols that we can have that... we waive the permit fee, but lay out the protocols. This is what you need to do. And if you do go to have a fire, this is the number you call to notify that you are going to have a burn at this point in time. Because we have a lot of debris to get cleaned up, especially on the private properties, the rural properties, and farms. And a lot of fields don't even have a fire number, which is the access.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, just in response to both issues that you've raised, Councillor Thompson. First of all, the disposal of private debris or debris from private properties, the region has put in a place program where all of that material can be brought to the regional recycling centers. We haven't heard any indication that they're overwhelmed at this stage, that we need to open additional facilities. And so I think that might be a better issue for the council discussion on Thursday at Regional Council.
Yeah.
About what additional things they might be prepared to do. The other aspect on actual burning and so on, what I would do is I would look forward to a staff report coming from Fire and Emergency Services before the spring thaw in terms of if we can do it, what kind of concerns they have, how we might want to manage those concerns.
And the challenge we also have, too, is a lot of the debris, like I'll use my road for an example, is the snowbanks are all, got the trees all pushed up because the trees are all sitting on the sides of the road. There's just no way, it's great to get chippers, but are we getting crews with those chippers to chop the wood as well? I guess that's the question is, I think our staff are maxed is the question.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, the answer, I guess, to that is that in the case of the Ministry of Natural Resources, we're getting staff as well. The equipment we're getting really is a supplement for our staff to use. I think you're right. Our staff have been maxed out. In terms of any opportunities we have where they're not dealing with the weather, we'll be dealing with the debris.
Okay. Some of the questions as we go forward with our emergency procedures is opportunities. It was, I didn't think of it till we all have lessons learned after the fact. Is like, for instance, Cheltenham, and I know I totally agree with communications. You felt like you were isolated, so you just dealt with what you had to do. And, it was all localized as far as dealing with the issues until Hydro can get to you. And I got to say, Bethany and Daryl's emails were helpful, but I think this is the communication strategy, and I know some residents were going to the warming center once they found out, just to try to find more information, which was another challenge, not having the information and the understanding. It's lessons learned. It's the first disaster we had. We learned from it. We build from it. And I was just saying, so we got Cheltenham Fire Hall that we could open up because the generator's right there on the fire hall. The same as Margaret Dunn, as we go forward, we could have probably used it, subject that if we ever have another disaster similar. I guess the other question is plans for generators, I guess, like for Mayfield, for instance. We eventually are going to expand that facility. Is that something we need to think of? I know we got Caledon East well under, but also schools. I guess the question I have is the availability of having showers. People were looking for a place where they can have a shower after 3 or 4 days. And, that was what I think Mayfield was utilized as. And I got to tell you, the staff worked around the clock. I understand getting shower curtains up and stuff for privacy, or they're trying to. So I got to say, that was just one of the questions I'm just saying as we go forward with our emergency procedure. Have we talked to the schools that if we can utilize that and other facilities that we can have that were better staffed, I guess is the question I have that the residents were asking.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, I guess one of the parts we did say is next steps, we're going to have to look at what areas we have and how they're powered, and that'll be part of a review of some of our capital projects. I guess the part about the schools, the problems that we found at none of the schools, or at least we weren't offered any schools that had backup power.
Yeah.
And even if you look at the facility for offering showers, it would have been showers in the dark and probably with cold water.
Yeah. It was the same as I hadn't realized we didn't have backup generators, and this is a regional issue on the seniors' homes, or stuff like that too, which I wasn't aware of. But it's, again, as lessons learned. And I do agree, the big challenge is the radio stations and trying to get the messaging out is a tough one. And I think we need to send letters to AMO and FCM with our concerns that when we have an emergency and we request that we get this coverage out to our residents, that they give us airtime, and maybe even send it to CRTC, because when it comes to renewal for some of these radio stations, they realize that if a municipality asks for help, they step up to the plate. It's no different if you had a massive tornado or anything else that can come through. We need to get it out to our residents the best way know how. And that's the biggest challenge is the mayor said, this is the worst hit area and we just couldn't get anybody notified to let people know what we're trying to do. And with all due respect, I didn't even know the news clips were from Barrie. I can't get Barrie and I don't think many can. So I think that's the... I think there's a lot of good lessons learned with how we go forward. And I think a lot of the other questions that I'm just looking through here that the residents were asking that I'm trying to go through, I think have been pretty much answered. And I think that was the big thing is people trying to find information and get an understanding what we're at. And I got to tell you, Hydro got better as time went on. And Bethany, thank you very much for giving us a better link to what you get from, because when you got on the phone, you had a link that was completely useless. The link you gave us was very helpful that we were trying to get out. But again, is getting it out to everybody in the community was a tough one to do. So thank you. And again, I want to say thank you to all the staff that worked on it. And I want to thank for CBC for coming. I want to thank Sylvia Jones for being here as well. Again, it's cooperation, how we recover. Thank you.
Councillor DeBoer.
I guess the question I would have is that we talk about having the region having central pickup for debris. A lot of people don't have a way to move it. Like, nobody has pickup trucks. Very few people have pickup trucks. So there has to be a way that when you speak at the region, talk about waste management, I think City of Toronto is looking at having it available that they can pick it up at curbs at the curb as part of the recycling program, I guess is how they're doing it. I think that's what we need to really focus on, because the people, you know, generally speaking, they drive a small car now. They don't have a pickup truck. A lot of people don't have trailers unless we're willing to figure out a way to make that happen.
I guess through you, Mayor Morrison, again, the issue about the actual pickups and what is supposedly happening in Toronto is, I guess, the curbside pickup is still limited by size. So major trees are not going to be dealt with by the City of Toronto when they're on private property. That's my understanding of the situation there.
Not at all. But we have a couple of arborists like Owens, and I think they've been out and about. I think I've seen their trucks in our area. So we do have people, and I guess it's just a matter of having a way to let people know who it is. But I think it's the vast majority of people are going to need assistance at the curb as opposed to in a central location. A question maybe from Brian, because the damage, while it was extensive, it seemed to be really localized. Like the one street here in Caledon East, was it tree varieties? And because of the subdivision, what was the reasoning why, or are these trees already part of an issue with the emerald ash borer and they were diseased? Like, how come it seemed to be so very more localized in some areas, whereas it was widespread anyways?
Through you, Madam Mayor, one issue is age. You know, in the urban areas, we don't have that many old trees. And it seemed like the older trees were the ones that were hit. And coincidentally, a lot of them were ash trees. So it looks like it was species and age is the main determinant.
Okay, so I guess this is just something that we've already realized and that we're asking our developers now to look at variations in trees and do tree planting in subdivisions rather than going single type of a tree. So
yeah, we've asked for variations in trees for many years now. There hasn't been an ash tree planted in Caledon since 2006. So.
Okay. One of the other things that seemed to be part of the conversation in my area right now is the condition of the roads. A lot of the roads, because of the ice is really stuck down on the asphalt. And it hasn't been able to get cleaned right off or cleaned right down to the street. Somehow, and I've been trying to address it because, like, we can't move it off our own laneways right now until it miles up a little bit to be able to get it off. I think what we need to do is try and look at a public service message explaining why the roads are in the condition they are, that the ice is really stuck to the roads. And I think, is it Sunday maybe they're talking about? Monday we're supposed to go back around zero, and that's going to have the opportunity to try and lift that off the road. So I'm just wondering if there is a need to use the media to promote that sort of thing.
Okay.
Carbide braid should do pretty good on some of these poorer asphalt roads too, right? Lift them asphalt out of it.
Just shave, no paint.
Do the shaving in the wintertime. I think generally speaking, when I spoke to like the number of the people in my area, I think this is an eye opener because when you look at the issue that they had out in Eastern Ontario, where it was widespread. I happened to speak to a couple of the supervisor, the highway or the hydro supervisors, because our hydro was out and we actually had them out a couple of times to turn hydro on and off was we got our lines back on. And when they had the supervisor was actually one of the guys that was out in Eastern Ontario when the hydro went out there. And he said, the one thing here is that you had people in the neighborhood and you had people around in restaurants that had hydro. So you were never far away from a warm meal. You had to get there, but you weren't far away from a warm meal. He said that when he was out in Eastern Ontario, he spent 2 weeks eating Mars bars, Pepsi, and chips, because there was nothing other than the whatever you could get out of a variety store, and none of them had power. So I think as residents, and especially rural residents, we have to take this as a message that we need to be able to be prepared as individuals. We look at emergency preparedness for the community as a whole, and with the warming centers, the cooling centers, and that. But I think as residents, we need to start thinking about, if we couldn't manage 3 or 4 days, you need to seriously look at what options you have to kind of take care of yourself. Because 3 or 4 days out in the rural area, and I count Caledon East as rural, because the vast majority of the hydro in Caledon East comes overland. Like, it comes in poles coming into the community. Mississauga didn't have as much trouble because it was underground. But if the towers had to come down like it did in Eastern Ontario, we'd have been in big trouble. So I think this is kind of an opening. Like, I know we're going to review everything, that the good things that worked and the things that didn't work, and fix our plans. But I think as a community, we need to seriously look at how did we manage as residents during this whole thing, because that's part of the things that we need to do as rural residents. We can't be looking at having everything taken care of, but we've got to be able to manage some of our stuff on our own. Doug's got a generator at home. My cows did better than I did, because the cows have a generator, and that was the best thing we ever did, because it started up and it ran and it was designed to run. So they didn't even know the hydro was out. But I think that's the one thing we need to do is be prepared ourselves as residents. So I do congratulate staff. I think Ontario Hydro, it was a pretty big job, and I think everybody did what they could and what was possible. And there were people that weren't happy, but the vast majority of those people that I spoke to weren't realistic, and I think that some of their frustration was because they weren't prepared themselves. And I think that's something that we need to think about, is that if you were prepared yourself more so, I think that it wouldn't have been as bad.
Mr. Barnes?
Through you, Mayor Morrison. In terms of your first question, Councillor DeBoer, about arborists, on our website, the information piece that we have in terms of response to the ice storm, we have identified the associations and the websites you should go for arborists and electricians. So if residents need to know that, it's there.
Okay. Councillor Mazzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First thing I'd like to do, and as other councillors have, is just to say thank you to staff of all the various departments, from communications to public works, fire, parks, every department pulled together. And this was an unprecedented event, and I don't know you can ever prepare fully for something like this. And the effort that was put forward, although not perfect, it never can be, showed the genuine will and drive to manage the event and to provide for our community. So I just wanted to personally say thank you very much for that. I just wrote some notes down in no particular order, but I'll start with on the heels of Councillor DeBoer's comments. The roads certainly do have a sheet of ice on them in various conditions. And the sidewalks, too, I would add to that, are in a similar situation. So I would just like to add that to the list going forward, that we're going to need to have those, both sidewalks and roads, reviewed going forward, and hopefully getting back down to either the concrete or the asphalt as the weather warms up. The second was to parks. One thing I noticed very clearly was evergreens were hardly touched, relatively speaking. They manage the ice storm extremely well. I don't know if they stay more pliable because they're evergreens through the winter months, but I could count on one hand from what I saw, the evergreens, certainly in comparison to deciduous trees, they manage it much, much better. And I am absolutely certain that your staff are looking at the various species and how they manage this storm. And from a policy perspective, I suspect coming out of this would be, as we kind of touched on earlier, is replacing these downed trees with hardier trees, maybe, subdivisions that we add to our community, looking at implementing a good assortment of hardier trees that would manage this type of storm. I don't know if you wanted to comment on that, but that was one thing I noticed right off the bat is the evergreens did much, much better.
Through you, Madam Mayor. There already is a list of variety of hardy trees that they use in developments. In evergreens, it's partly to do with structure. It's not, the canopy's not top-heavy that you have in deciduous trees. And if we're going to continue planting boulevard trees, we can't put evergreen trees in the boulevard. It causes sight line issues and encroaches on the sidewalk into people's walking lanes. So I would just say that we always have a variety of lists for developers to follow of hardy deciduous trees.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that your staff are looking at that. With respect to fire, Chief Bailey, you mentioned in your presentation vulnerable people were visited by fire, senior centers primarily. I was just wondered if at all are very recently opened vulnerable person registry was at all captured in this event?
Through you, Madam Mayor, the new registry, I believe, only has a half a dozen registered occupants on it. That list was not visited during the ice storm.
Sorry, it was not?
It was not visited during the ice storm.
Okay. Because one thing I would just throw out there is, and I think I made the comment when we started talking about this registry, is actually events such as this. You know, if someone either registers herself or someone on behalf of a vulnerable person, it's not just an acute fire event or a medical event. It could be a prolonged climatic event such as the ice storm, where we just might want to keep that in the back of our minds as to there's a vulnerable person there that, you know, if they're alone, that this has implications beyond what it would, you know, impact you or I. So I just offer that out there respectfully.
I agree. That only part of the vulnerable registry was fairly new last year.
Sure.
And it was something that we'll have to look at and be part of the emergency response plan as well.
Appreciate it, Chief. Sorry, I think I'm all over the place here, but back to parks. Brian, you mentioned that ash trees were heavily hit. As it's the province is trying to regulate managing that debris, not taking it off-site, so to speak, I'm just wondering is, because now we're going to be dealing with a lot of private residents who are ash trees who want to get rid of it, is that going to be part of a plan or a message that the town's going to put out there? This is what an ash tree is. This is how we suggest you manage its removal, things like that.
We can look at that. There is information on our website and the Region Appeal website as far as managing ash tree debris. I would say it is a federal jurisdiction, the management of EAB, and they are eliminating the region ministerial orders or county ministerial orders. They're going to be coming out with a new boundary that basically from Sudbury across Ontario is an EAB regulated zone, so the movement of material is not as much a concern as it was. As far as we're concerned, we're chipping as we go, and we'll use those chips as mulch in the future.
Okay. All right. I appreciated CVC coming and delegating. It was good to hear that this event is being reviewed at the conservation level. And I don't know if there's anybody here who can speak to it, but I would assume that the TRCA would similarly be reviewing this.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, I did indicate earlier we have talked to TRCA. Their assessment is not complete. They have volunteered to come to council later in the month.
Okay, thank you very much. On the last page of the presentation, we talked about the last three bullets were dealing with the emergency response plan, assess the need for more facilities with power backup, and a plan for replacing destroyed trees. My question is this going to formulate part of our cost summary that we are keeping track of?
For instance, the backup power for our facilities, I don't know how we can classify that. We should have it anyway just for continuity of our regular service. So that will be a benefit on that side as well. In terms of replacing destroyed trees, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Last thing, Madam Mayor, is a higher level comment, and I speak to it any chance I get the opportunity, and I certainly will take the opportunity here, is the issue of climate change. I personally do not see this as a remote, once-in-a-lifetime incident. I see it very clearly as a sign of climate change, and this needs to register with us. In so many ways, particularly in a community like ours, how we plan to grow. And I'm glad Ms. Jones is here. And I always talk about, the growth numbers coming from the province. And we need to really look at this and understand that it's not just replacing trees and removing trees and, clearing up rivers. This is, in my opinion, cause and effect, and we really need to look at this at a very high level and how we manage growth and the results of growth and things like that. We're starting to see stuff really close to home now with what happened out in Calgary, downtown Toronto with the flooding. And it's great that we do low impact design and all that kind of thing and energy efficiency, but we really need to look at the impact of removing green space and paving it and that type of thing. So I hope this resonates with us as a very large, overarching issue with respect to climate change. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Foley.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Some of my points have already been addressed. I totally agree with Councillor Mezzapelli. I don't think we can look at this as an isolated event. I had a conversation during the period of the ice storm with Skid Cree. Some of you may know him, an extreme environmentalist, very well-educated man in his field. And he pointed out that changing weather patterns and so on, in his opinion, point to that we're not going to get the major snowstorms that we did in the past. The major events now going forward will be things like ice storms and things we haven't had to deal with before. So I think we do have to take a lesson away from this and totally be prepared. Speaking about being prepared, I wondered about the possibility going forward of the town putting on some sort of it's fresh in people's minds and the motivation is there, putting on some sort of an emergency preparedness seminar. Because I also agree with some of the other councillors who have spoken that not everybody was really as prepared as they could have been. I think you heard creative ideas come out. I saw someone post on Twitter that if you take a Tupperware container, fill it with water, put it outside, you've now got a block of ice you can put in your fridge or your freezer to help things stay cold longer. So there are things that people may not have thought of that were coming out that if you bring those out and put a plan in place in people's minds, it's like being prepared for a fire. If you do a drill and have a plan, you're more ready the next time an event like this happens. So I think that would be a good move on our part as a municipality to help people feel more prepared. The emergency control center that was here, was that strictly representatives of the town, or were there people here from the region or from Hydro?
It's from the town.
from the town.
But we are connected to the region, and to then Bethany made the arrangements for Hydro One as well.
Right. Okay. So I think that's a very good point, that everybody's on the same page and working together. I think another thing would be to more fully engage the libraries, because in the absence of a Caledon-wide radio station or radios that are giving Caledon any attention, I think if people know in advance and again part of this emergency preparedness, that if they go to the library, they can get online and use the internet so they can see what's on our website, they can see the tweets, they can see the press releases. I think that media is there for us, but we got to let people know where you can go to see it. CVC spoke a bit about an issue I wanted to talk to TRCA about, so perhaps when they come in, it would be the trees in the river, possible flooding issues in the spring. I have spoken with the Humber Valley Heritage Trail Association, and they have some concerns because they are actually a volunteer stewardship group of the trail. But in their stewardship arrangement, they consider only just regular maintenance. They're concerned that there will be an expectation now of them dealing with downed trees. TRCA themselves only allow people who are trained to use a chainsaw and have proper safety equipment to do that. Within their volunteer membership, they have one person. So I think we need to look at what's going to be the expectation of our trail groups and how we can help them, because those volunteers, they don't have capacity to deal with what's on the trails. I'm happy to see we're going to look at the data that we have and analyze what would be the best trees to plant going forward. To Councillor Mezzapelli's point about the evergreens, Brian talked about how they're not the best choice for a number of reasons. Also, they don't provide shade, and I think one of the goals with our street trees is to provide some shade, so there has to be at least a mix. Again, I had no order for this, sorry. Hydro, there was someone spoke to, I think it was Mr. Barnes, about improvements on their website. Also, I wonder, I've had people say to me, can Hydro do better? I guess it would probably be true that most of the Hydro outages resulted from limbs coming down on wires, which makes me wonder why we wouldn't bury more of the wires. I know the costs have been told to do that is excessive. The cost of this is excessive, and this is probably not a one-time occurrence. So maybe there needs to be a dialogue about, at least in maybe, I know on a rural basis, it would be really hard to do given the size of the area, but perhaps in the hamlets and villages and towns, where there's still wires above grade, we could have an expectation that they would consider burying some of those wires. And I guess my last point would, second last point, seniors on a fixed income, they don't have the physical ability to cut trees or move them out to the curb. And on a broader perspective, in snowstorms of any kind, to even perhaps shovel their driveway or to be continually removing a windrow. And if on a fixed income, don't have the money to hire someone to do all those things for them. So I wondered if a discussion at a later date could be, just as we have some tax discount for seniors of a certain limited income, if there can be any way to help those same seniors with issues like this in some way. Just for a discussion. And my last point would be, I think the plow operators had issues because of cars parking on streets and because of people shoveling driveways out into the streets. And this certainly made it problematic when all of that mess froze. If they came around a second time to get it, couldn't be dealt with because it was all frozen in place. So I think maybe, again, some proactive news release on the town's part during the winter months, reminding people that those are two things that we'd like them not to do and the reasons why, because it became really evident here that it causes problems. Thank you.
Councillor McClure. Did you push your mic, please? Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of the things I was going to bring up have already been discussed, but Councillor Thompson, he had this idea about a lot of property owners and a lot of farmers I have a lot of trees down, and it's not possible to haul it all away. I think we should have permission to tell the fire department what we're doing, what day we're going to do it, and it'd be good if we could just do it, because a lot of one-acre lots and five-acre lots and a lot of farmers, there's a lot of stuff. It's not possible to haul the damn stuff away. It has to be burnt. So I'd like permission to do that somehow. The CEO, Greg Barnes, says 200 trees damaged. Well, that's ridiculous. I got a bush behind me with 10 acres. There's 200 trees that they're all, the damn stuff's all damaged. Some of the smaller ones aren't, but it's a disaster in some places.
Doug, Mr. Barnes was talking about municipal trees on the boulevards, not private property.
Okay, well, I just got that, but it's that idea. And Alan's idea about more generators, it'd be a good idea if somehow we could lobby the provincial government or the federal government for funding to get generators for some of our town buildings. I see Sylvia Jones is back there. I don't know if this is possible or not, but we should have generators in all the town buildings, just like farmers should have it for a dairy barn or a chicken barn. It's something that's not just a luxury. It's something that has to be done. And everybody had good ideas. And Nick, Councillor DeBoer, he had a good idea. It's not, people can't expect the town to do all these things. People have to be prepared themselves. We can't nursemaid everybody. People have to look after themselves to a certain extent. We can't. They have to have extra food in. They have to have candles. They have to do a few things themselves. We can't babysit everybody. That's just my thought. And I'd like to thank the staff, the hydro workers, and the staff have been excellent, and they've done their best, and we've all done our best. That's all I got to say.
Councillor Paderak?
Yes. I'm going to make a number of comments, and a lot of them reflect comments that I've got from the public. And in that regard, I wondered whether, as we move forward with our new look at our emergency plan, and I think our emergency plan in some ways addresses what we do when we have a state of emergency, and we have to have a number of different kinds of plans that call for different measures that are short of that. And I think that's where we came up a little bit short on this one. But in that regard, I don't know whether it would be useful to have a public meeting to ask for comments or to set up an email address where people can send in their comments of their experience that they had during this storm and suggestions, because I've certainly got a lot of suggestions. Some of them I don't think I don't necessarily agree with. And one of those suggestions I had was the lifting of the burn permit. But we're talking about green material, and it's... To burn green material, you're going to have to use an accelerant, and I don't think we want to go there. I think we have to deal with this material without burning it, or leave it for a season. You might be able to burn it in a season. But people are impatient right now, and I think that's one of the things we have to look at. And we have to make sure that we're not spinning our wheels, if you will. A lot of the material is now encased in ice and snow. It makes no sense to try to move it until nature takes care of that with a warmer period of time, and it's easily lifted. We don't want to be spending resources fighting the climate. One of the questions that came up constantly was the town role and the hydro role, and I sort of shot from the hip, and I said, basically, if there's any wires involved, we're not there. That's hydro. If there's just trees down in the road and it's not close to wires, then our guys go in and clean that up. And for the most part, we were able to open our roads. And one of the questions that came up was, what are we doing on the contracted roads? Are our contractors communicating with us? When Puckering Lane and River Road. Now, in both those cases, not too many trees came down on River Road, and it was able to be plowed. On Puckering Lane, the residents got together and hired two arborists and cleaned it. I mean, it's quite a lengthy road, but... there are some people with means, and they just went out and hired an arborist so they could get in and out. They weren't going to get in and out. But I don't know whether the contractor went up there and spread sand or did anything. And I don't know. I was never able to find out what our protocol was in terms of finding out how our contractors were doing and whether they were throwing their hands up or whether they were communicating with Public Works. So I don't expect an answer to that today, but I would like to know what kind of protocols we had set up in that regard. I think in terms of the hydro role, one of the criticisms that I got from the public on a couple of occasions was they were critical of the fact, and this was in the media, that Hydro One crews were going into Toronto. And they thought that Hydro One crews should stay in Hydro One area. I didn't necessarily agree with them. I said that it's an emergency, and we have to spread the resources around, and corporate boundaries weren't the way to do it, especially in Toronto with lots and lots of seniors' buildings and apartment buildings. People are actually in worse shape in apartment buildings than they are in houses in some ways because they don't have elevators, they don't have water, whereas in most places in the city or in any place on communal water, you would have your water would continue. Well, when you're in an elevated building, you lose your water. So I didn't necessarily agree with that, but I would like at some point in time to have an explanation from Hydro One how they determine, how they do allocate their resources. Next title I have is Chaos and Waste Management. I think one of the things that I'm going to be saying at the region is that when an event like this occurs, I think that the fees at the landfill for a carload of ordinary garbage or recycling should be waived. I mean, with the chaos that went on, people missed their collection. They went to the landfill, and they were charged $5. It's not a lot of money, but in terms of the spirit of what was going on, it was an aggravation that people didn't need. I wonder if the town, if in fact the region is accepting all manner of brush that can be delivered to the CRCs, and in terms of the Caledon CRC, we have the Herhoff system there, which some of it can be used for in the compost program. The town owns a lot of land in that area that the region doesn't have access to automatically, and I hope we will share the floor of the pit if they need it for excess brush.
Mr. Barnes will explain why we can't.
Through you, Mayor Morrison, the issue about what can be done in a pit is if the pit has a license, then all you can do is what you're licensed to do. So we have tried to use it as temporary storage for ditching, things like that, and we have been prohibited from doing so by M&R. And unless they are prepared to relax their legislation, then we would be basically breaking the law if we were to store it at our yard.
Well, on a different subject, the American government had a program they called Don't Ask, Don't Tell. This is an emergency. I would just go by the seat of your pants. In terms of, I had some comments about social media, and we have to use it more. I think that that's something that maybe we can ask our IT and media people to, sad to say it, teach these old dogs some new tricks in terms of how to tweet and how to effectively keep in touch with people. Older people, there are the senior population that aren't able to access this, but more and more people are, and it was surprising how many people were able to keep a mobile device charged even though they had no other power. They managed to keep their phones working and to get email and such. So I think we have to work on that. In terms of species of trees, I'm glad to hear that we can move the material around. In terms of the street over here in Caledon East off of Cranston that had that disaster, after I heard about it, I drove by, and those weren't necessarily very old ash trees. I think what we had was that the meteorological world, the way it happened, is that the storm dallied in certain places and really loaded up trees. I mean, when you go over to the Grange and Shaw's Creek, there was huge amounts of ice. If you went just a little ways away from there, it wasn't anywhere near that bad. And those trees on that street along whatever it was in Caledon East, they were about 12 inches.
Summergate.
They were about 12 inches in diameter. They looked like very healthy ash trees, and they just loaded up and snapped. And Councilor Mezzapelli is right. You go to the cul-de-sac and you turn around, and there's all these beautiful spruce trees. Picture-perfect Christmas scene. No damage done at all. So, but those trees, it's the type of wood and what happens to ash trees when they're sheltered. I live in a very windy area, and my tree, I lost maybe 6 branches. I had ice, but my trees go through so much wind on a general basis that they're stronger than some of these trees that are in suburban areas, and they're protected from the wind. They're actually not as strong, and they might have been fertilized and grown faster than they should have, and so they're not as strong as they could be if they had grown a little slower. So that's about all I have. I do think as we go forward, we have to come up with some sort of a very concise message sticker, larger than the Hydro One one, is that we all put inside of our cupboard that tells us what to call and what our account number is. We need a sticker that tells people what the phone numbers are, what the email addresses are, what the website addresses are, what to do in certain situations, and where emergency shelters will be established in our area, and what number to call to see if they've been, all that kind of stuff has to be right there, readily available, and pre-distributed. And I think I agree with the other councilors. We can't assume that bad things aren't going to happen. We have to take this as a warning to be prepared in the future. So that, and we came through this very well. I mean, congratulations to all the staff, but congratulations to residents for using a degree of caution. We didn't have any fatalities that I know of. We had some unfortunate fire instances, but in terms of personal injury, aside from the lady that was out on Finnerty, that was the only major one I heard of. I do know a resident whose father insisted on staying in his apartment in the city, and they went down to check on him, and he had been suffering from hypothermia, and he died 3 days later staying in there. So I think it's important that we have a more robust protocol for visiting all residences when roads are shut down and they can't get in and out. And I think we started to do that late in the program, but people certainly appreciated the contact. And I would hope that the province comes with some help. But one suggestion I'll conclude on was that if we don't get all of our costs covered, I had one suggestion from one resident who said that he thought that the public would be in favor of a one-time dedicated tax increase to cover it off in 1 year, so we don't run down this or that reserve, because this is an unbudgeted expense. And if we needed to come up with $500,000 or $600,000, that the $30 a house that would cost would be acceptable to people. I don't know how other councilors feel about that, but I would hope that the province would come to our aid. Failing that, I think we have to think seriously whether we want to run down some reserve, which we have to replace through a tax increase at some point in time later. So I just put that one on the table. Thank you.
Councilor Bedford.
Well, not to repeat everything, but so many people have said thank you, and I'd just like you to know that the people that are emailing us are saying the same thing. It's not just us as councilors. They're saying thank you. I would say that 99% of what I received, there wasn't a bad word. It was just simply thank you. We've got lessons learned, and now we have to move on. little chuckle, too. I couldn't help but think, Leo, as we went through this, is that you must have thought some days that bylaw issues look pretty good. I really did think that. I'd really like to thank, though, specifically EMS and Daryl for his work with seniors and particularly Oliver House. I think the key there is that it's one thing to recognize that there's a need. It's another thing to put a face and a contact to it. And as you told us earlier, even though you had solved the issues at Oliver House and knew what was happening, you didn't stop there. You sent somebody from our ES to go up their driveway and to say, we're here to help you. And that meant all the difference in the world. And I think that's one of the big things that I'm getting back from people is that personal contact. One of the frustrations with the hydro line was that it was simply a voicemail line. And the message changed about every hour and a half, and it was conflicting. And it really made a difference. I was one of the lucky ones on Christmas morning who actually got a live person at Hydro. And the reason I persisted was because I was trying to identify a new outage with new downed wires. Within 2 hours, a truck came up to evaluate the situation. It's that personal contact. And the things that I'm getting back from people are, in terms of the personal contract, the social media, people are saying, I had no hydro, I had no landline, I had no cell phone, and I couldn't charge my cell phone. So they were really without. Now, they found ways. They went to their neighbors. They found ways. But what they're saying is, if there's a way that we could provide something that I could get in touch with a person to ask a question. One of the comments was that perhaps, going back to Councillor Patterak's point of having some kind of recognition of a number, if we had a number similar to our graffiti number that we have all year long, 99% of the time it's just diverted to our switchboard here at the town. But if there is an emergency, then the company, for example, that we use for the graffiti could bring in people to actually have a person to talk to people who call in to get help. Sometimes it's just that personal contact that's needed. So whoever's looking after this in terms of putting the new emergency procedures together, that's something to consider. The issues around water, I think, have to be addressed. The two issues around water that my residents are concerned about is after a number of days, they really wanted a shower. And one of the suggestions was that in this particular case, Orangeville did not lose power. Could we have a protocol that if you show your driver's license and your address, you can go into their rec centers and have a shower? That might be something that we can help generate. Sometimes they'll be out of power just like we are. But if they're not, they are a resource to us. So is Erin. And even Brampton, that may have larger facilities, my son was out for many, many days, but their facilities are larger and perhaps they've got the generator backup. We could use them as well. So that's something I think they're saying in terms of protocol. The other thing with water is remember those of us in the rural areas, sometimes we need water for the basics of flushing the toilet. We don't have power to do it any other way, and we don't have the water coming into the house unless you have a generator. So I know on our line, we were sending pots of water up and down. So people did find ways of having some heat, a wood stove, a propane stove, or whatever, but they still couldn't flush the toilet because they didn't have water. So that's something that we've got to consider as we put together these warming centers or localized areas where people can go and get the materials that they need. The one question I have, and I don't know whether it's to Doug Barnes or to Daryl, at one point we had considered early on in the process of opening Robert F. Hall and maybe the other high schools as well. Was that a consideration, and is there something that happened that we didn't do that?
Mr. Barnes will speak to it, because there was.
Okay. Yes.
Part of the problem with Robert F. Hall, and I think I did mention it earlier with the schools, is the backup generator or the backup service they have is very limited.
Okay.
So I think in the case of Robert F. Hall that it was mostly the aisles and that kind of light up. Okay. So you wouldn't have had access to showers. You wouldn't have had access to warm water.
Okay. Good points, and I knew there had to be a reason for that. The other issue, my last one, is the issue of the burn permit came up, and I know there are varying sides of it, but people are saying, what do we do with this debris? And I'm sure that'll be worked out. So, again, thank you to everybody, but just remember the specific needs that people have in these situations, and we've all learned lessons. Thanks.
Councillor Thompson?
Yes. I got to say, I think everybody in Calhoun's got to be congratulated because, I mean, the volunteers, everybody, the Christmas spirit was well alive when everybody helped one another. And I think between everybody stepped up to the plate and was good to see. Coming back is Hydro One ran into an arborist, and they had the neatest thing from Bracebridge, the way they were brushing. They had it right on a boom, and it was just the way it was cutting the trees. As far as I'm concerned, he could have spent 2 weeks here in Caledon and been done. Great idea, Brian, maybe for the trailway. But it's the only way. I think people have to come to realization. We're going to have to brush these trees back. And I know as much as people are trying to protect everything, I think reality has. Trees will recover. There will be growth. But I think we have to. It's going to be an extreme to get it back. And I think that's something we need to do. But the arborist was saying that the ash tree, it's the grain of the wood, is where it rips to the pith of the core, where you'll see a healthy oak or maple, the branches will shear off and drop down and they'll be fine. But it's the beech, butternut, the ash, the white and mountain ash, and, geez, what was the other? But there were certain trees, they'll rip right to the core. It's the way the grains run is why they were taking it as bad. And I know Councillor Paderak said they weren't bad in his area, but in our area, our woodlots, like as Gord will say, you know, we've lost 30-40% of our woodlots, and it's just the species of trees that have been, Mother Nature's just, you know, cleaning a lot of things up, and maybe we're going to solve the emerald ash borer rather quickly for us. But the reality is I think it's a variety of tree, and like our clothesline, the water sat like this on top of the clothesline, not underneath. And when you see that sitting on branches and trees and hydro wires, that's why stuff came down. And I think it is localized, but in certain areas, that's the challenge we had. And the last thing I wanted to ask was the Councillor Paderak had a good point on emergency preparedness. I think that's something we almost need to sit down and review as all of us, because we have changeover staff and know what everybody's job is. You know, do it every couple of years, but also the level of the event. I know we're there for those real extremes, but what do we do for the mid-extremes, and what is the protocol, what kicks in, and where it's needed? And I'm wondering, too, is in the meantime, as Councillor Befford had some good points where we can use, is like what we do for farms. If I've got power at my farm, but someone else doesn't have a generator, they have the hookup that I can take my tractor and my generator and move it over. And I'm wondering, is there some town facilities that we can transfer generators? Because there's one place where there was an arena that we kept powering up and the compressors kept going down. Yet the guy across the way said, well, you should have come across. I could have supplied you a tractor and a generator. I could have powered up that facility. So I'm just wondering, is there a generator, like, you know, not always, we're always going to be down across the town, but do we have those portable ones that we can even plug in at our public works? You know, we've got the machinery. You know, can we just get one generator that we can move from one yard to another if we need to, or to an arena as backup? And I'm just saying, it'd be nice to have everything, but how do we get there? And I'm just saying, now maybe those are some of the things that we can look at as we go forward. And I know it's room and budget, but at least we can get a plan to know what we need to do for next year's budget. Thank you.
I think you're going to see some of that when they bring their report forward and as we move forward.
And one quick question, too, is when with emergency preparedness, when it does come, maybe we can do that instead of having a community meeting, just do a public meeting on that, just so that the public knows what we're doing.
We've talked about that too. Okay, Councillor Mezzapelli.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It will be quick. Just wanted to touch on two issues that have been talked about. As we go through this restoration, I guess, phase of this, of the ice storm, first is with respect to sidewalks, but most primarily roads. And we talked earlier about getting them back to a condition that we're expected or historically get them to, which is back down to grade, be it asphalt or concrete. And Councillor Foley talked about some of the challenges, particularly on the roadways, cars parked on the roads, and all of the implications of that. I know that there was in the area where I am, we were fortunate to still have power, but there was this one spot stuck out in my mind where it was obvious that there was a car there because I could tell the plow had gone around, and it just happened to be a dark spot. And very easily, it iced up, and someone could have easily driven into that, and thankfully it got plowed before something like that ever happened. And I know Councillor Foley touched on it, and I just want to reiterate it. Prevention before enforcement, but either through our website or through our town page. I know I've seen it other winter seasons, but again, just encourage to put it out there to the public. You know, the rules and the bylaws that we have in place are, you know, you do not park your vehicle on the roadway. Don't push your snow into the roadway. And failing that, I know I've spoke to Mr. Hill and Leo about this, is our plow operators, it hampers their efforts, it impacts residents, and when they come across incidents like this, you know, again, you try your prevention first, but there are incidents where people are parked where they shouldn't be on the roadway. For plow operators to call it in, to get that through to enforcement officers, to rectify that problem. Again, you don't want to bring it down to enforcement, but in the end, that's better than, you know, an incident that might happen as a result of those occurrences. So I put that out there. A lot of the calls I've had once the dust has kind of settled on this incident has been people saying, you know, I've got this unprecedented windrow at the end of my driveway. I can't clear it. I can't manage it. And I know that this is a large event. There was a lot of ice and snow and it was wet. And that is what it is. And there's not much you can do about that necessarily. But with respect to the ice specifically, and we talked about managing it and scraping it, I just wonder, I don't know how it will come off, and but if we put a windrow of ice at the end of people's driveways as we clear the road, I don't know. Like, I know I was fortunate enough to chip away my driveway, and that was heavy stuff. So if we clear out the roadways of ice and deposit a windrow of ice, that's going to be difficult for residents to manage. So I don't know how best to manage it, whether it's chemicals that melt it or whether we scrape it. But I've never seen ice like this on the roadways, so I don't know how it's going to come up and how it's going to be played out into private property. So I just put that out there as a consideration. And the last thing with respect to the ice is I don't know if it's going to, because I know when I chipped, it came off like rockets, and I pegged my car a couple times, and I don't know if that's going to be an issue. I know in the Bolton area, parking's at a premium. People will park two on the driveway, one sideways on the end, whether that might be an issue. So I just put it out there for consideration. The second issue in this restoration phase is to do with trees, and I know that there's ongoing communications and dialogue with the region and the province. And I know that the region has offered to pick up the debris if it's bundled and not to exceed a certain weight and length and that type of thing. And this is just a suggestion in the conversations that are coming up. As an example, Christmas trees, which the region picks up, those don't have a 4-foot limit, and you know the town or the region comes and picks those up and processes them as they do. And in this extreme circumstance, I just would like the conversation to be had. Is you know, some people maybe aren't able to cut them into 4-foot lengths or whatever, and I've seen tons of longer limbs, but people have hauled them out onto their boulevards, and maybe we need to have a conversation as to whether there's an opportunity to treat it, either they chip it in place or haul it like they do Christmas trees, but just that we explore those conversations with the region, and if it comes to it, to the province, to look at that as a way to manage this debris. Thank you.
And just for your information, Councillor Mazzapelli, that's exactly what we're going to be discussing at the region on Thursday. And we need, the regional councillors going to the region on Thursday need to have a position of what we're going to bring forward. And I don't have any other speakers, so I'm going to take my turn. I think for the town of Caledon, we have to prioritize our actions. I think that making sure that our roadways and sidewalks are safe has to be a first priority. And listening to the Credit Valley Conservation and hearing that the responsibility for the trees that are in the river is our responsibility, I have absolutely no idea when we're going to get to that. We have so much to do here, just in our own municipality with all the trees down, that between the TRCA, the Humber, and the Mimico Creek, and the other creeks, and the Credit River, we've got a huge problem. And I think we need more than the responsibility being put on the town of Caledon to clean up the rivers, because when we're going to be able to clean up the rivers is up in the air. And, I mean, we're going to be months cleaning up the town of Caledon. So I think that we're going to have to prioritize for staff as to how we're going to get there. And hopefully, if we are taking on that responsibility of the rivers, which I think M&R should be taking on, in a coordinated effort, you know, with CBC and TRCA telling them how to do it and what to do. Because let me tell you, many times people would like to cut down a tree that overhangs the river and are told they can't because it helps to cool the close areas at the banks. And I totally understand that. Well, now those trees are in the river. So we have a big, big problem. And when you look, I mean, I drive out of Inglewood every day, and whether I look, whether I'm on the Grange Side Road looking or on McLaughlin Road looking, everything's down. There's a huge tree down in the river just west of the bridge on McLaughlin Road. And everything on the sides is hanging over in the river. There is going to be a problem. And I know that our arena floods all the time in the spring when the ice, you know, backs up and we have the ice jams and it backs into the little downtown, the floodplain part of the village. Well, we're going to have huge problems there. And then I look at Melville, they'll have some huge problems. I look at Cheltenham, Terracotta. It's not going to be pretty. And it's probably one time that Bell Fountain will be going, hallelujah, we're up on the we're up on the top, everything goes down, so it falls over the escarpment. But these are huge problems that we've got before us. And to think that all of this is going to be cleaned up in the next few weeks or the next couple of months, I think we're dreaming. And it's going to take a long time, and it's going to take an enormous amount of money to do this. So I guess I'd like to see a priority of coming back to council on how we're going to do this. I do truly believe that we need to help our seniors. I don't want to hear that some of them, and there's many of them that would go out and try and drag this stuff and get their little saw out and be trying to cut these branches. And I couldn't even imagine myself, and I think I'm pretty able-bodied, but I couldn't imagine. We've got a ton of trees down on our property, the 2.5 acres, and apple trees. One just split again the other night, right in half. Half's over here, half's over there. I couldn't imagine having to bundle it. And this is for the region, and I'll be saying this on Thursday. I could not imagine in a 4-foot length, 30 inches high, no more than, you know, 6 inches in diameter, get a life. Like, honestly, I don't know how you do that. So I'm sorry. I think there's going to have to be some serious discussions. I believe the region has to step up along with the municipalities and be part of the solution. And it has to be more than just on my regular weekly pickup day. I don't see how that's going to work. And with all the snow out there right now, you couldn't even pick it up because I don't think you'd find it after the snowplow goes by. So it's probably a month or so away before you'd ever be able to pick up all the stuff that I'd put out. And if I did manage to do my 4-foot length and my no more than 44-pound bundle, I'd have so many of those bundles, you'd need a whole truck just for my property. So I don't think it's too practical, and I think I'm probably, especially out in the rural area, I'm probably very indicative of what you're going to see out there. And
So I think we all need to, as the municipalities in the region, look at how we are going to help our residents. And I don't mean we go into everybody's backyard and clean it up. I really don't. But we've got to come up with something. And the other thing is I'm starting to get phone calls now on potholes. And I get big potholes where they're worried they're going to lose their cars. So I don't know if you can we could fill them with the ice we're pulling off, I guess. But we're going to have to start looking at that problem, too, which is, I think, probably caused by the conditions that are out there. So I think we're going to see many of our roads that are going to deteriorate because of these ice conditions and the freezing and the cold. And I think come spring, you know, we've got our roads budget and we've got all of that. I think we're going to look at it and say, oh, my gosh, because of the conditions, it's just probably not going to be enough. So everything else that I had already told staff what I thought of many things, but I think with the burning permits or the burning, I think we're going to have to be very, very careful. Because I can tell you, I don't want someone with a big, huge bonfire and all the little, you know, the what do you call it? Yeah, the cinders or whatever, and they're all red, and they're coming flying over my house. I'm not going to be a very happy camper, and I don't think anybody would be. You know, safety has to come first. So I think that, you know, the burning thing may be necessary, but I think we're going to have to look at it in this priority of actions, and that would be one of the things we could look at, but we're going to have to contain it to the smaller size and everything that we normally do. I know we had a brush pile, I bet you it was at least probably 50 feet across by 30 feet, and that was just from the stuff that's fallen in the last few years. But it got so huge, we spent $1,000 having a guy come in and trip it all for us because it was just impossible to burn that much. So I think we're going to have to be, I think we've got to be careful about the burning because most people will do it properly, but there's those that get carried away. And I don't want to see that. Anyway, thank you very much for all your comments. And I will tell you that everyone I've spoken to commends all the staff at the town of Caledon. And Hydro, you know, they just think the job that's been done is phenomenal. So I do want to thank everyone. And someone that I didn't thank is Fu Wing and his people, and Ron and his people. Because something you might not be thinking about, but finance is involved. And they're the ones who had to make sure that they're going to get the paychecks out for overtime, and they had to work and work and work to make sure that money was available when it was needed and all of that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a team effort by everyone, and I think you've done an absolutely phenomenal job. And remember, there's cake tomorrow at 3:30 out in the foyer. Councillor Thompson, you had something?
Real quick is the risk management. If we know that we have potential flooding problems because of those trees, and we know about it and we don't act on it, does that put us in a predicament or not? Or maybe that's a tough one to ask at this point, but I'm just saying,
Mr.
what's
Barnes,
our risk?
Would you like to speak to that, please?
I think that's the kind of stuff, Councillor Thompson, that we'd have to do a really good assessment of.
Okay. I have a couple of motions here. The first one is moved by Councillor Foley, seconded by Councillor Thompson. Whereas the December 21st, 2013 ice storm caused significant damage to trees and shrubs on public and private property, and whereas the Region Appeal has established a program to allow private property debris to be disposed of at regional recycling centers and curbside pickups in January, and whereas the cleanup will take longer and will extend into the summer months, and whereas the debris will exceed the size restrictions of the region's yard waste pickup program, therefore be it resolved that the Region Appeal be requested to have recycling centers continue to receive debris until the cleanup is complete,
and further that the region extend its curbside program until the summer yard waste program commences and the size restrictions be revisited. And further that a copy of this resolution be forwarded to the Region Appeal, the cities of Mississauga and Brampton. All those in favor? It's carried. Okay. The next motion has been moved by Councillor Mazzapelli, seconded by Councillor Beffert. Whereas the December 21st, 2013 ice storm caused a significant emergency response and ongoing property cleanup, which to date has cost the town almost $600,000. And whereas the ongoing cleanup will add significantly to the cost, therefore be it resolved that town staff continue to monitor costs and apply for financial assistance to the province of Ontario. And if the region appeal agrees to coordinate such a request, that the town's request be included in the regional request for assistance. And further, that a copy of this resolution be forwarded to the region appeal, cities of Mississauga and Brampton, and MPP Sylvia Jones. All those in favor? Oh. Councillor Beffert isn't here. Councillor Foley will second that. Okay, all those in favor and it carried. Thank you. We're going to go to public question period now, but I do want to thank Sylvia Jones for coming and CVC for coming also, and Dan LeBrec, the Commissioner of Public Works, is here. I want to thank all of you for coming and spending the afternoon with us. So are there any questions of the public? Yes, would you like to come up to the microphone, please? And you can state your name, please.
I'm Doug Demerling, and Madam Mayor and councillors. I know we had quite an ice storm, and it was without power 4 days. Some people were longer than that. A lot of that didn't need to happen. This tree across the road that caused a power outage in fall was the same, one of the same trees that caused power outage in this ice storm. I lose power here in Kellen more often than I do up in Muskoka. We've got a lot more trees. And part of it was because before G8, a contract or $1 million went out to a U.S. firm in New York State that came in and cleared all the power grid lines. And you mentioned on Sunday that this was the hardest hit area in Hydro Ones. And they have to be more proactive in trimming their trees in this area. And now I talked to one hydro linesman in this area, and he said, well, I have a problem with trimming trees in Kelvin. Now, I don't know how true that is, but, you know.
He said what? There's what?
A problem with trimming trees in Kellen. In other words, whether it's tree huggers or not, I don't know. But, it's a thing like this that, but they got to be more proactive. And the same tree out there, I think, would probably cause another accident, power outage again.
Yeah.
And then it was so frustrating dealing with Hydro One as far as lack of communication. They give me one day, then they bump it to another day, and you can't talk to anybody. And we did get power restored for a very short time, and then it went out again, and I think we dropped to the end of the queue. But it went out last night, too.
Yeah,
we lost power last night, too. So it was, but it was just kind of frustrating there. But I say we lose power more often here than we do up north. And
okay.
I think that has to be addressed to Hydro One to get after them to be more proactive. And I know myself going to Hydro One is not going to get anywhere. If the town went there and put pressure on them to do a better job of trimming the trees in Kelvin, that we'd have less power outages. You know.
And we will be talking to Hydro One. I can tell you I do get phone calls from people who Hydro One are going in and clear-cutting their corridor. And the people are yelling because it's being cut, and they don't want to lose all those trees. So, you know, it's kind of.
And for his communications websites, I lose power. I can't get on the internet.
I know.
I know. I'm lucky to have one landline that I can use for phone, and I suggest that everybody should have one of those landlines rather than battery-powered phones. But that they would get better communication.
Okay, thank you. Okay, is there anyone else? Yes.
Yeah, it's on. Good afternoon, Madam Mayor, Council, staff, members of public. I too want to thank everybody for their ongoing efforts in cleaning up this mess and working with the best they had. I know it was all hands on deck for you guys, and I wouldn't want to be sitting in your shoes either. A couple things, if I may suggest. I kind of watched the storm come in from Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday. My father drives 2.5 hours.
You have to state your name into the mic,
please.
Oh,
sorry, Sherry Broshi.
Thank you.
Resident of Bolton. He drives 2.5 hours in to come and see us. He was spending Christmas with us, and he was planning on coming down Saturday or Sunday. Patty, Rob, you know the story here, and I'm going to tell you both. I monitored that thing for 3 or 4 days, and I'm on the phone Thursday going, don't even think about getting in that vehicle. Now, having said that, he never came down till Monday afternoon. My suggestion is the fact that I was due diligent enough to keep an eye on this weather. I asked my husband to make sure there's all kinds of firewood in the garage and water and extra stuff in the fridge and blah, blah, blah. But the one thing I did do was fill up my bathtubs so I had water to flush the toilets. So when you talk about, you know, letting the public know and being aware and them accepting responsibility, I 100% agree with that. If it's possible, you know, could we sit down and discuss this? This is what worked for me personally. I was fortunate enough to have hydro. I had people coming to the house, filling up water containers and all this. I asked Patty, I go, are these guys going to be able to fill up waters at these centers? You personally weren't sure, you would have to ask. I said, you know what, just come here. People had showers at my house. I had no issues with that. But I did fill up my bathtubs to have water for the toilets, and I had drinking water in the house. So these little things do make a big difference, planning ahead and stuff like that. And I did monitor that storm coming in. I knew it was going to be big, and I planned for it just like I helped my family plan for it. The other thing that you did mention was the communications. I started getting phone calls at home and asked me if I had power, which I did. And I got on the Town of Kellen website Saturday and Sunday, and there was nothing. There was no nothing. I have pictures of it on my computer. Not that I'm trying to be mean, but there was nothing. So I agree, communication really does need to step it up. As far as charging their phones, it's funny that you guys say this. People were probably going to their cards and plugging it in. That's probably how they were charging their phones, which they had to. The other thing is I witnessed, and I was actually, I never said anything to anybody, but I'm going to bring it up now. Rob brought up the fact that the plows needed to get around and clear, and I totally support that 100%. I watched an elderly gentleman, which I was out walking around, and I actually called my kids and said, come around the corner and help this guy. He had both his cars on the road, and he had his snow plow out there trying to get rid of the snow. Unfortunately, the bylaw officer came at the same time and ticketed him. So it's just something to look at. It's something to think about, a part of the equation when you talk about clearing the roads and people parking on the roads. I agree. It is a hazard. You guys are trying to do the best that they can do, and I get that. But when you see somebody out there using a snowplow, getting rid of the snow in their driveway, having their cars on the road, and the ticket officer comes and tickets them, I don't know. I'm not going to make that call. I personally think there's a line, and that maybe could have been just got out of the car and say, listen, the plow's coming. Could you please move your cars off the road as soon as possible? It didn't happen. He got 2 tickets for each car. So it's just a suggestion. Okay. The other thing was the warming centers. I'm glad that it happened. I was worried that knowing that people had no power starting early Saturday morning. This was already 24 hours into it come Sunday night, more than 24 hours. So thank you so much for doing that and getting it up and running. It was just a few suggestions. I've been in contact with a couple other people, counselors, throwing some suggestions, what we witnessed and what worked and what didn't work. So I hope together as a community we can come and make things a lot better. Thanks okay. very much, everyone.
Thank you. Okay. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to come forward? Seeing no one, we'll move on to bylaws. I have a motion moved by Councillor DeBoer, seconded by Councillor Mazzapelli, that the following bylaws be read a first, second, and third time, and finally passed, bylaw 2014-001, to confirm the proceedings of the Council for the Corporation of the Town of Caledon at its Council meeting held on the 7th day of January, 2014. All those in favor? I need more hands. Thank you. It's carried. Okay. Mr. Barnes was just telling me that based on everything that has been brought up today and that staff will be bringing back the report on the 21st, not the 14th, because there's more things that they need to be looking at. Okay. So, adjournment. Okay. Councillor Paterak, Councillor Mazzapelli, all those in favor? It's carried. Thank you very much.